you know, because of this resilience that you have, you know, you keep pushing yourself. And it's like golf. You know, you play a bad round, but you still push yourself, or you hit a bad shot. You still push yourself because you're resilient, because you know that you have that ability. You just have to work at it. And it takes work. And that's why I relate it to grief.
Hi, and welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, where deep, meaningful, and philosophical conversations about golf and life are par for the course. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. In today's episode, I am in conversation with best-selling author and certified grief coach, Robin Chodak. As Robin explains, her love of golf developed through playing the game together with her husband, Jerry, who is a passionate and talented golfer. When Jerry died suddenly in 2019, Robin, who had already had multiple encounters with grief and loss prior to Jerry's passing, felt determined to honor his life and memory. Through continuing to embrace and enjoy golf and all of the life lessons it can teach us, a moment of enlightenment came upon Robin, feeling compelled to inspire and help others on their grief journey. Robin wrote and published her book, 10 Grief Lessons from Golf. It was through personally finding and reading this book that I was drawn to Robin and felt compelled to invite her to be a guest on the podcast. Robin has personally inspired and helped me on my own grief journey, both through reading her book and also through engaging in this podcast conversation with her. I hope you enjoy and take inspiration and hope from my conversation with Robin, and better still, you feel better equipped to play your game of life and your game of golf. Before we jump into that conversation, please make sure to subscribe and follow the GYH podcast on your podcasting platform of choice, and also leave us a 5-star review to help us grow the show and get the word out to the masses that golf is good for you. You can follow us on social media, Instagram at Golf Yourself Healthy and X at GYH Pod. Also, don't forget to head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com to read our latest journal articles and to sign up to future newsletters by using the contact tab and providing your name and email address. Oh, and finally, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway. Robin, thank you very much for joining the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. It's great to have you as our guest. Our first international guest, should I say? Well, I say all of our guests. There's been me in one individual podcast so far, one other guest who, like me, is in the UK, and you are our second guest. So we're trying to be international jet setters on this podcast, but great to have you. Where are you joining us from?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. I am joining you from sunny Florida.
Fantastic.
It's actually not been quite so sunny. But hey, the weather is good. I mean, it's warm, and that's what matters. I do want to say to you, Chris, I'm really glad that you are starting this podcast, because I believe we need more. We need more people out there talking about grief. And I think it's great that you're talking about golf, because that is very near and dear to my heart. So kudos to you for taking this on. It's a big journey for you, but I'm glad you're doing it.
That's a really kind thing to say, Robin. Thank you. I mean, as we'll get into talking about in this podcast, I was very reassured. I was inspired, actually, really, when I experienced grief quite recently, and I had this idea to create Golf Yourself Healthy, and I went out and I did this Google search around golf and grief, and up came Robin Chodak and your book, which we're going to talk about a lot. But you know, it's great that there's people like you out there that can inspire me and us as well, and the listeners. So thank you for agreeing to be here, Robin. Let's kick this off. Let's talk about the spirit of your game, the spirit of your game of golf anyway. So how did it all start for you in terms of your relationship with golf?
You started out with the spirit of my game. Well, I'm just going to segue into, I played the other day And it was one of those days that you go out there and you think, oh my goodness, have I ever golfed in my life? It's one of those bad days. And as a golfer, we understand those things happen. But when you begin the game, you really don't even understand what to expect about it. Now, I became involved in golf with my husband, Jerry, who passed away in 2019. He was an amazing human, first of all. He was an amazing doctor. He was an artist. He lived his life with so much passion, so much inspiration, and he loved the game of golf. He golfed almost every day. He golfed as much as he could. He was a scratch golfer. He just loved it. And he got me interested in it. I didn't think I was going to like it. But interestingly, when you start to reflect, which we often do as we face trauma in our life, we experience difficult moments, we'll go back and we'll think about things in our life. Like, oh, why am I interested in golf? Well, it was in 1995 when I met my second husband on the golf course. Because at that stage in my life, I was going through a difficult time. I had been divorced from my first husband. And I said to myself, I need to start something new. I need to start something different in life. Golf came to me. Why golf came to me, I have no idea. At the time, I didn't know, but I met my second husband, Steve. I never continued golf, ironically. He wasn't even playing golf. He was just there with his son, giving his son a lesson. So in retrospect, you know, all these things that happen to us in our life, they're little stepping stones of things that are going to happen to you in your future, I believe. So I met my husband, Steve, playing golf. I was married to him, and our life ended abruptly, and I had to deal with grief and tragedy. It's when my husband decided to take his own life. So that was my first exposure to grief. It's the reason that I started down this path. It's the reason I changed my careers. I was a computer analyst, but there was a lot that had to happen. I had to go through this hard, difficult time of processing my grief, getting over the shock of that to begin with. Fast forward, after my husband Steve died, I meet this man who I already spoke about, Jerry Chodak, and I was blessed to meet him and to start another life with this man who loved golf. I started golfing. Oh, it was not a good experience, to be honest, because, and I'll tell you, I would consider myself pretty competent in the other things I tried, other sports-related things. Mostly everything that I've tried, I felt pretty confident, pretty competent. And this game, it just challenged me so much that I was beside myself at times. I learned to give, and I talked about it in my book. It was this love-hate relationship with it. I said, how could this little ball control me so much? I just couldn't understand why I couldn't get the hang of it. Like, this is supposed to be easy. Like, what's so hard about golf? But then I realized it's like anything in life. You must put the time into it. But in my mind, I thought, okay, I could dance. I could play tennis. I could do this. I could do that. So it should just come easily. Well, that was a rude awakening. So I don't know if you've had that same experience.
Do you know, it's actually music to my ears hearing that you, on the one hand, I'm sorry you had that early experience, but equally, I talked about this very recently in my launch episode. That was entirely, my experience is more or less identical to yours, frustration. But funny how we have that experience with it, yet fast forward to now and here we are still involved in it, loving it, talking about it. You know, it's, I don't know about you, Robin, but it's part of that kind of, because it's not easy to overcome or to get the hang of, that there's something naturally quite addictive, ultimately, is one word that comes to mind. But if you're anything like me and kind of have this resilience or determination to succeed with something, that golf's great for that, you know? So I don't know if your experience has been like that.
Yes, yes. And I love, Chris, I love that word you used, resilient, because absolutely, if someone asked me how to define myself, that would be the word. I would say I am resilient. And I would say, from the little I know about you, absolutely, you are resilient. And I believe that people that are resilient, especially when they encounter grief and different types of trauma in their life, those resilient people are the people like us. And there's others that will put themselves out there. You'll put yourself out there to help someone else because you know, because of this resilience that you have, you know, you keep pushing yourself. And it's like golf. You know, you play a bad round, but you still push yourself, or you hit a bad shot. You still push yourself because you're resilient, because you know that you have that ability. You just have to work at it, and it takes work. And I, that's why I relate it to grief, because going through the process of grief takes work. It's like anything that you want to move through. And I don't like to, you know, there's so many words. I'm a big a word person. I believe that words have a lot of power. So I'm very careful on the words that I choose, because I say you never get over it. You don't get over the loss. What I say is you learn to integrate the pain into your life. And you find ways. Like, I love the name of your show and your Instagram, you know, Golf Yourself Healthy. I love that. It could be, you know, used in so many ways, not just grief. It could be a person just going down a bad road and bad habits in their life, and they just need something to get them back on track. So it's a great metaphor for life.
Thank you for that. And given that, call it play on words, whatever you will, you're a word person. You can probably tell I'm quite a word person as well. I like word play and sort of, yeah. And you talking, so let's go on, I think, to talking about your book, because it's because of your book that I came to know of you, and that the reason why we're ultimately now here today, you and I having this conversation, and for the benefit of our listeners. So do you want to, Robin, say a bit about how this book, 10 Grief Lessons from Golf, a copy of which I'm holding in my hand here now. Do you want to tell us a bit about how that came about? What inspired you to write it?
Yes, yes. Well, this is not my first book. So every book has been inspired. And it comes from a place from within. And I believe in a higher power. I believe in a presence greater than me that I have learned to listen to. It comes. It comes either in a meditation or in a dream, or it's a voice you hear. And this has happened with my other books too. And I've learned to just listen. You need to listen when you have these things happen. I call them mystical experiences. And same thing happened with this. I just heard that I needed to write this book because, first of all, it was going to help me as I was dealing with the loss of my husband. And it was a way for me, in a sense, to honor him. But also, it always goes back to, what am I doing? It's to help someone else. It's to inspire someone. So I am so happy when you say you found it and it inspired you. So that brings me great joy when I know that I have inspired someone on their journey. And that's what I wanted to do. And so we moved into this golf community. We never lived in a golf community before. And it was my husband's dream to live on a golf course. So we moved here, you know, did a lot of work to the house. And then he passed away. So he didn't get to spend a lot of time here, maybe like 4 months. So I'm living on this golf course. And for a couple of years, COVID hits now. No, you know, they're still golfing, but I didn't golf. I just kind of stayed stuck in my house. And then like the light bulb went on. I'm like, okay, I live at this golf course. You need to start golfing. Get out there. See what you can do. Remember the things that he told you about golfing. So I started and, you know, I was very, you know, intimidated because I'm with a lot of good golfers. When you're on a golf course, there's usually in a private country club, there's usually good golfers. It took me a couple seasons before I felt comfortable to join the league. But again, that is the process of our mind. That is working through these things. It was not about anybody else. Golf is about you. It's about us and our game. It's not about other people. So once I realized these other people don't care what I'm doing, it's about me. And then I joined the golf league. But the book came to me very easily to make analogies because I realized that everything that I was doing in golf was what I had been doing all my life as I've been processing my grief. It's like, okay, when we hit a bad shot, what do we typically want to do? We want to ruminate. We want to sit there and analyze it. We want to think and we want to stay stuck in that bad shot in the beginning until we learn it's not serving us. It's like, okay, this is what the pros do. This is what the Zen masters do. You forget that. That's done. It's over. You move on to your next shot. But as a beginning golfer, it's hard to do that because you're so focused on that shot. And it's like, well, what did I do wrong? And, you know, so that is one analogy. As you're going through your grief process, maybe you handle the situation the way you weren't happy with, or maybe it caused some disarray with a family member or your spouse or whatever, because you handled it in a way that wasn't the best. Well, you know what? You can't look back. You just have to keep moving forward, because from every moment, from the point of your loss, is an opportunity to move forward. So we have to caution ourselves. How often do we want to go back in our past, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, our past is important because we want our past, we want our memory, but there's a defining line when the past always brings us to the state of where we can't move forward. That's a problem. And so it's the same with golf. If you get so upset, there was times I would be so upset, I wasn't able to move forward. I would just I wouldn't finish playing in the beginning because I was just so upset. I didn't realize that I needed to let that go, let whatever I did that I felt was wrong, you know. And I can just think, I have so many like stories of clients in my head that I've coached over the years, right? Like, oh my God, I went out one night and, you know, I just had too much to drink and I did this and I did that, and they're all upset and they're mad at themselves and they have all this emotion. And I say, you know, that was what you did at the time as you're processing your grief. So what you can do from that is learn from it. You can learn from it and you can move forward. Same thing with golf. What do? We learn from the way we're swinging our club, you know, if we're not turning right, we learn everything from golf. It's such a metaphor for grief and for life in general. It's like, how are you handling your game? How are you handling your game of life?
Absolutely. There's something in what you've just been saying about, you know, that I picked up on in the book and in what you've just said now, which is about self-talk, what you tell yourself, your own internal narrative. But then also there's something where you talk about old beliefs that have been ingrained. You know, so what I talked about in the launch episode for Golf Yourself Healthy was how in my introduction to golf, a childhood insecurity of mine appeared on the golf course and in golfing environments, which was, I'm not good enough, right? So from what I read, you've encountered clients who have experienced similar beliefs, you know, even to a degree. You know, what you're saying with after Jerry passed and you're out there playing at the club with people who are better than you, it sounds like you, like me, have also experienced this thing of, which is actually a dangerous trap to fall into, is comparing yourself to others. I suppose in general, anyone else out there who's encountering these kind of feelings of imposter syndrome or kind of negative self-talk, you know, how best to try and overcome that in the game of life and in the game of golf?
Yeah, well, that's the question that everybody debates and has so many responses to. Now, what I believe is I believe in something called neuroplasticity. And what that means is that we have the ability to reframe and actually create new neurons in our brain. There's a lot of science behind this. I know it happened to me, so I know it's true. That's just my retrospective analysis. But we have the ability to reframe our thinking. Again, it takes work. Now, there's also the belief that any habit can be broken or created within a specific amount of time. Some people say it's 21 days. Some people say it's 30. There's a debate on that. But we know that we are habitual creatures and we learn by habits, by doing things over and over and over again. That's why there's Tiger Woods, because what does he do over and over and over? The people that are excelling in anything, what do? They do over and over and over again. But in addition to the repetitive motion of the act of doing, there is also that repetitive motion of the thoughts. And because thoughts are energy and movement as well, and they're in your brain. So we must be very cognizant of the thoughts that are running wild. I like to say wild in our brain, because sometimes they feel like it's like a caged mouse in the brain and they're going wild. But again, it goes back to, we have the ability to reframe that. So if you were one of those people that are constantly negative, 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 most people don't know. This is the way they have been wired their whole life. It's because, and you alluded to it earlier, you realized it when you were on the golf course that, you know, when you were a child, you were told, you know, you weren't good enough. So that was ingrained in your brain. That became part of your thought patterns. Anytime you did something that wasn't up to your standards, then immediately your brain went back to, oh, well, I'm not good enough. So that was imprinted there. It's imprinted in your brain. So until we recognize that, you know, you have to get to this place where you realize that. And I don't know how people get there. They get there from listening to me, listen to our podcast, and or they find something on the internet. They read a book. They realize that there's power. There is power in our brains and reframing. So it goes back to, you begin with the positive talk. Now, I have to make a comment about this, because there's so many people out there that they're so against this. They call it the thought of positivity, positive thinking. And I wrote about this in one of my blogs or books. I said, they're wrong in my opinion. The difference is you're not trying to dismiss any of your negative feelings or emotions. It's not about dismissing them because everything we have to feel. It's about reframing and moving away from that negative thinking that's been imprinted there and start to create new neurons with the positive. So for you, Chris, you go out on the golf course now. You start the process of rewiring, reframing. You're going to go out there and you're going to say, hey, I can do this. I'm a good golfer. And you put that into your brain. And guess what? Your cells, everything in your body responds to that. And you'll hit some good shots. May not hit every good shot, but guess what? It's the good shots that you're going to remember. And you're not going to be thinking so much about the bad ones. And you're not going to go back to your childhood thinking, wow, I'm not good enough. Do you see what I mean?
I do. There's something I was going to share with you, actually, that there's a book that I'm reading at the moment called The Psychology of Stupidity. And it's been written by some French psychologists, and it's since become an international bestseller, translated into lots of other languages. And one of the psychologists who contributes an article talks about how, or this is how I read it and understood it, in our brains and with aging, positive memories do actually tend to outlast negative ones. And so I find that very interesting, both in reading your book and something you've just said now about how this idea of the good shot, when you hit those good shots, they are the ones that will live in the memory. And when someone asks you, tell me about, and actually later on this podcast, I'm going to do it to you. I'm going to ask you, tell us about the best shot you've ever hit, or, you know, a really positive memory. But it's interesting, isn't it? You know, and I think it ties this idea of positive thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about, you know, taking inspiration out of and staying on this theme of positivity as well, finding positives out of a really tragic and traumatic situation. So there's a line in your book, and it's in your final chapter, actually, which says, even in the midst of difficult times and grief, there's always something beautiful to be found. And building on that, there's also something where you talk about being inspired and how you, I think, like me, have, you know, grief can be so disorientating in the moment of loss. But what I found, Robin, was it was on the day that my son passed that this idea for Golf Yourself Healthy came to me. And so I guess what I want to ask you is, you know, when you're faced with this sudden surge of positivity, which feels bizarre somehow, like you're getting this positive surge despite experiencing something so traumatic, and you want to go and pursue this, you know, there's another line, an inspired person often feels compelled to be different and do better than their current state of being. Well, that's exactly where I found myself just over a year ago. But equally in your book, you talk about, I don't think it was worded like this, but it's to the effect of go easy, take it easy, don't rush things when you experience grief. So to anyone out there listening that is processing their grief or it's quite raw and it's just happened, who may be experiencing this surge of positivity and thinking, I want to go and requalify and retrain to do this, or I want to do this. Is there a balancing act to be had there? Because I, on the one hand, I sort of wonder, do you run the risk of just making quite rash decisions and your kind of naive positivity, if you get what I'm saying?
Yes, that's a good question. But I do believe, I think what you were saying, you had this compelling, this surge of energies, the surge of thoughts, the surge of thinking. I believe that you go with it because I had the same thing, because it's the way you're processing your grief. And for me, I had this desire. I wanted to write. Now, did I know if I was going to publish the book or not? No, I just began to write because, first of all, writing is very cathartic and it's a way to communicate. And I don't think, well, I have to stop for a moment because I do say in my book, one of my books, that especially for the griever, it's important to not make any big decisions right away. Meaning like, don't go move to another country. Don't, you know, sell your home. Don't invest in something like a big, huge investment right away, because until you examine especially when it comes to finances. You know, those are big moves because you're just still in this traumatic state. So it's important to just, that's where I think you're talking about, where you just wait, you kind of relax and process. But the other part is, it is a balancing act, because if you are very in tune with yourself and you're listening and you hear, okay, yes, it sounds like you are, Chris. Okay, I need to do this podcast. So you're listening. That's part of evolving. That's part of our soul's evolution, learning to listen. That's awareness. Listen, because you're not only doing it for yourself, you're doing it for others. And I think that anytime you are stepping outside of yourself and it's a benefit to someone else, I would say that's always it's a goal, because you're helping someone else. It's a goal.
So I hate golf. I don't hate golf, just to be clear. I don't think you do either, but that's the name of a chapter in your book.
Right.
And it jumps off the page, right?
Right.
So tell me about the chapter. Tell me about the essence of this chapter.
Oh my gosh. It's so funny to hear you say that now, because at the time, I did. I felt like I hated it, but it kept calling me back. It's like I couldn't let it go. It just kept calling me back, but I felt like I hated it. I was just so angry with myself because I'd hit the bad shots. And I would say, oh my gosh, what's wrong with you? You know, you could do this. I would do all this negative self-talk. But it was part of me processing. It was part of the journey of where I needed to be. And so I'm actually grateful. I'm grateful I had such an intense relationship with it, because now I mean, I could say I love it like you do, but again, am I gonna like still have like a great game every time? No, but I don't know if I wrote it in this book. Did I read it? Oh, I think I did, because I, like I said, this is my fourth book, but it was a story when I was in the Uber.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was gonna ask you to tell the story, but you're gonna go on. Please.
Oh, yes. And the Uber driver.
You're on the way to the Honda Classic tournament.
Yes, yes. And I get the flat tire, and there was so many things that happened. I couldn't get the tow truck to come. I didn't think I could get the Uber driver. I just figured I wasn't meant to go to the Honda Classic, even though I had tickets. Long story short, I made it there. But what I found even more interesting was, because I didn't have a car, I had to take an Uber home, pretty long distance. But the Uber driver was amazing. And I felt like I was definitely meant to sit in his back seat at that very moment in time to listen to what he had to say to me. And he was speaking my language, but he said something that, to the effect that he never had any bad days. And I was like, wow, I'm pretty positive. But I just never had said that or even could fathom thinking that. But it really made me think. He said, I just know that some days are better than others. Some, you know, they're all good, and some days will be better. And I thought, wow, I really needed to hear that. So you can take it to your golf game, right?
Right.
I mean, take it to life, big time in life, but take it to your golf game and say, hey, you know, not every game is going to be great, but they're all good. It's all good. First of all, you're blessed to be out there golfing.
Absolutely. There's something also, though, in that story that I read. Donald, I think his name was, right? If I got this right from your book, he said, or I think he talked to you about or maybe I'm getting it mixed up, but you'll keep me honest here. This idea of being a victor or a victim from your grief.
Yes, he said it.
I find that incredibly powerful, and far be it for me to sit here and be preaching, because that's not what I'm here for, to people about how they should process and deal with their grief. But I just find that so powerful around, you know, I guess it can be altogether very easy. And actually, speaking from experience, and I'd love to hear your experience with this, is some very ugly feelings come up when you deal when you're dealing with loss and grief. And it can be quite easy to have this kind of woe is me mentality. But ultimately, I believe, and such has been my experience, that there comes a point where you say, there's a fork in the road, to use an expression here. Like, which way am I going to go? am I going to carry on down this track of believing that the universe is out to get me, or am I actually going to channel my energy into something positive and try and, as you said before, integrate this grief into my life, because it's never going away. This loss isn't going away. So how's your experience been with this victor versus victim thing?
Yes, yes. No, I love that analogy about the fork in the road, because yes, you can continue to do the same behaviors where you are falling into that trap of victimization, where you just, like you said, woe is me, everything is going wrong, everything, nothing works for me, everything, it is just a mess, my life is never going to get better. You can fall into that, and guess what? That's where you're going to land. That's where you're going to stay, because you're in that mode of thinking. And the more that you're there, the more that you're going to continue to stay there. But there's that fork in the road. And if you can just say, oh, I'm going to go here, even for this one moment, in this one day, guess what? You start the momentum of moving away from that victim mentality, which is a mentality. It's easy. Believe me, it's easy to fall into that, especially when you have traumatic loss. I mean, oh my goodness. But it goes back to that, you know, number one, that resilience that you have. It goes back to, okay, where are you getting your support? Are you surrounding yourself with people that are going to help you move in that forward direction? There's things that you can do, because some people, again, it goes back to they're wired that way. Even if you don't have a tragedy, I'm sure you know people. Oh my God, I spilled my coffee. It's the biggest, they think it's been the worst thing that happened to them, and I ruined my outfit, right? They're just wired that way. They just get upset on every little thing that has happened to them. They play that victim role. God forbid they have an actual tragedy. But guess what? Tragedy wakes you up. Tragedy gives you the opportunity. Mm-hmm. It gives you the opportunity to look and say, where am I going here? You know, that's why I talk about grief. Grief, I call it, there's a course I created. It's about grief. It's on Udemy. It's a platform out there where you can get courses online. And I call it grief, a new way of thinking. And what I say about grief, it sounds absurd. It sounds crazy. I'm surprised I haven't gotten hate letters. Because I say to people, make grief your friend. Have you ever heard that?
I have, because of your book.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I wrote it in
I
that
have
book?
To admit, when I read that, I thought it jarred a little bit. Yeah. But right. Say more about it.
Right. Because, you know, you talk about a friend. A friend is there for you. A friend wants to help you. It wants to help you through the hard times. It's there in the good times. It's there in the bad. A friend you can trust. A friend is there, wants to help you get through something. Well, that's what grief is. The process of grief is there for you. It's to help you move forward. It wants to be your friend. It wants to take you by the hand every day and walk with it. And it wants you to process it, because if you don't process it, you will get stuck. And so grief wants to be your friend, to walk with you. And then when you've gotten to this place, you say, all right, thank you. You've done your job for me. I don't need you right this moment. I can walk on my own. But I know you're there anytime, because we all have grief triggers throughout our lives. And you're there, and you can take it by the hand again, and you don't need to be afraid of it. So that's a new spin on it. That's what I teach. You know, it's your friend. And if you reflect back over the years, and I've had a lot of loss. I've talked of loss since I was a young child. I can reflect back in so many situations where, guess what? I have learned. I have learned from my loss. I have learned to do things different in my life, to react to situations differently. And grief, going through the loss, has given me that opportunity, because I allowed it to do that. Now, again, if a person stay stuck, and stays in that victim mentality, they're not allowing that opportunity to happen to them.
Mm. You know, when you explain it like that, I can certainly get on board with it more. And another thing that has certainly helped me to get on board with this idea of grief being your friend is, by the time this episode airs with you and I, Robin, the listeners will hopefully have had a chance to listen to me and my friend Ben in conversation about grief, baby loss, and spending time in his and his wife's company a few weeks ago. A phrase that they used to me was, through their loss, we have gained more than we have lost. And what they were ultimately referring to was, I think, what you're seeing here, which is, it can sound very trite or sort of insensitive somehow, but it's this core message of, with grief comes opportunity, essentially. You know, so it's taking the positive out of a impossibly tragic and traumatic thing and finding something positive out of it. You know, in their case, they've raised tens of thousands of dollars for baby loss charities and raised awareness and things, and they are an example of, you know, of what we're talking about here, is kind of taking that victor path essentially over the victim path, I suppose. So is there a link, by the way, Robin, on that Udemy course that you talked about that we can share afterwards?
Yes, there is a link. If you go on to the Udemy site, you could search my name, I will pop up, or you can just type in grief, a new way of thinking. But
got it.
Yeah, there is a link, and I think it's Udemy/grief, new way of thinking. Yeah.
Great. Let's go back for a moment to this story. Do you want to, this story about you traveling to the Honda Classic, I'd like to, do you want to tell the story in full as to, for the listeners' benefit, what, you know, what happened and how you felt? And there's a reason I'm asking this, because there's a question around grief that I want to ask. So tell us it from start to finish. What happened that day?
Okay, yes. I was going with a friend of mine. She had got the tickets for us, and I was going to pick her up at a hotel in Palm Beach. I put in the address in my GPS, and it was taking me there. And when I got to a certain place, there was construction, and I had to turn around. And I remember hearing, I drive a little sports car, so I remember hearing a really loud sound. And I pulled over, and sure enough, my tire was completely flat. And I thought, oh my goodness. Well, I looked across the street, and there was a parking lot. So I was able to drive my car in there, and I thought, oh, thank you. At least I didn't have to leave it on the side of the road. So I pulled my car in there, and I was grateful for that. And then I called AAA, and they said they would send someone out. And I said, oh, great, because I really wanted to get to this golf thing because my tickets are there. I was all excited to see all the players. So they said, leave your keys under the mat. I'm like, great. So I'm ready to call an Uber. Well, and then I couldn't get the Uber because I couldn't get the app to work. I couldn't download Lyft or the other app. I'm like, okay, I guess it's just not meant to be. I must not go. I was going to, you know, a little upset, but I was just at that place of acceptance and not meant to be. So I call my friend. I'm like, I don't think I can come. She goes, oh, no, I'll send the Uber. I'm like, oh, that was brilliant. Send the Uber, pick me up. So she sends the Uber. Now get ready to get the Uber. And they tell me that the AA calls and says they won't come pick up my car because I'm not with the car. I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. Well, now I'm like, okay, what do I do? I really want to go. So I thought, you know, I'm just going to put the keys under the mat and I'm leaving. I just put the keys under the car and I'm leaving. I'm thinking, okay, let's hope nobody steals my cute little sports car. So I ended up going, and I did call a friend. He lived like nearby, and I asked him if he could go. I don't remember if he could pick it up or whatever, or meet the tow truck. It's been so long, I don't remember. But I ended up getting, maybe it's in my story and I don't remember, but I ended up getting to the Honda Classic, and I was, you know, again, I was happy to be there, but then I had to take the Uber home. Is there something I'm missing in my story?
I know, I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, I had to leave my car there, but I guess it was a very trusting situation because, I mean, I was parked in a place I shouldn't have been parked, number one, and I had my keys in the car, but I just left it because I thought, well, you know, who's going to steal my car? And I ended up getting a ride there the next day, and then the tow truck came because I was there. So it was a lot of stress because I could have chosen to just say, oh, I'm not going, wait for the tow truck, right? Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to go to the Honda Classic. So it took a leap of faith to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Reading that story and then hearing you talk about it now, basically what it sounds like you concluded was, I'm going to take a leap of faith here. The universe has got my back. Mm-hmm. My car's going to be there when I go back for it. No one's going to steal it. And, you know, think this situation is the way that it's meant to be in this moment. And partly what drew me to this story is not only the fact that you were able to remain in this quite incredible state of calm, despite the fact that, like, there was one thing after another, which I think most people out there would probably, after the first one, give up or say, or play the victim or say, oh, you know, the universe is against me. But I guess the thing that stood out was, I don't know if you experienced this in losing, you know, in any of the losses and the grief that you've experienced, but my experience has been in this last year, emotions and feelings feel more intense than they ever have done before. And the kind of average frustration that I might feel about, you know, just on the drive over here today to get to this podcast studio, there was a car coming the other way and something kicked up from the road and hit my windscreen. And I was angry and I felt, you know, I don't know what it was, but have you experienced that, like in more intense emotions? Or is even whether you've experienced that, or is that typical of grief, Roman?
Yes, I think absolutely, absolutely, especially in the beginning, everything seems like it's 1,000 degrees more intense. But then I think there's this pivotal moment. There's a change where you're like, oh my gosh. See, you're just so hyper vigilant in the beginning, and you're everything in your body and your mind, it's just all, it's not working. You know, I mean, I talk a lot about how grief affects the brain as well. So yes, everything is just hyper. But as you begin to calm down, okay, as you're kind of working through the grief and calming down, you realize that, or I did, and I think a lot of people, as I coach clients, you want to have that inner peace in your life again. And so now it's interesting that clients, after processing their grief, they start down this path of more of a, like a Zen path, or they're really searching for this inner peace kind of thing. And I help people work through that. So, you know, it's like my goal is kind of to live in a state of equanimity. So I was very proud of myself that I didn't get upset, but I wasn't so surprised because, again, it's all the work I do. It's a constant journey. It's like grief and loss, they put you on a new trajectory. And it puts you in a place where, for me, it's constantly working on myself, on that inner peace, on living in this state of being and existence. And so, yeah, if that would have happened, oh my gosh, if that would have happened, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I don't know how I would have responded, way different. But now I'd say, this is not a life or death situation. It's like I look at every situation. This is, why am I allowing this to deplete my energy? I mean, that's really my thought process now. I really, you know, I'm very cautious of how I accept things in my life and what it's doing to my energy, because I want to stay in that place of calm. But it comes with, you know, this stuff doesn't happen overnight. It takes work. And the grief, the loss is, it precipitates this type of thing. And it allows you, you get, like you use the word, and which I liked, you get the opportunity. You get it now. Unfortunately, you maybe didn't choose that, yeah. But guess what? You get it. And just like the couple you were talking about, they're amazing. So I'm saying to them, thank you for what I already can sense their energy, that they sound like an amazing couple, what they're doing, you know, raising the money and doing things, but they're learning how to integrate that pain into their life. And they are definitely resilient, and they'll be helping many people just like you. And then, you know, they'll keep moving. And so this is where we want to live. We want to live in this place of, you know, being calm. And so that's my journey. But am I always 100% good at it? No. I mean, I have things happen, you know, my pipe broke in my house. They had to bring a hedge hammer and or whatever you call it, tear up the rooms. And, you know, I'm upset, but it's like, what are you going to do?
Absolutely. Just briefly again on the Honda Classic, for those out there who may not know what it is, that's one of the pro events on the PGA Tour, I think, right?
Yes.
And where does that take place? What course or venue does that?
It was in PGA National up in Palm Beach, Florida.
Very nice. Had you been to any professional events before? Had you watched professional golf live in the flesh like that before that event?
No, I did watch the Senior Tour live.
Yeah. In fact, I had a chance to watch the Senior Tour. The Seniors Open, I think it was, came to a course near Royal Porthcawl here last year. And it's a different vibe. It's nice watching the seniors, you know? But I guess my question for you is, what were your takeaways from watching the pros do it? What did you learn from seeing them?
Well, I learned how, like, calm and collective they are. Very rarely, you know, on the tours I watched, I mean, they have this essence about them again. And it goes back to how they're wired to think. So even when, you know, I was watching this hole in the par three, it's like, oh, you know, they went right over the water and the one guy is over in the, I'm not gonna say names. The one guy is over in the sand trap and like, oh, you know, hey, it made me kind of feel good that even these pros aren't always hitting the best shots, but they have an essence about them. They don't seem like the way I would have been, right? How I would get upset or whatever. They just have a different essence. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, there's you're right. It's because they're trained, they're wired differently, but that doesn't say that we can't get there. Like I can get there, just like I am.
Yeah.
Much more calmer than I used to be in my everyday life. And I'm working towards that. I don't want to be, just because I hit a bad shot, I don't want to get so mad at myself. You know, right? I mean, I'm much better at it now. But even if I can't, I go in the water. You know, I don't like to go in the water. Who likes to go in the water?
Definitely not in the golfing context anyway. Maybe a swim in the ocean or swim in the sea. Maybe
that's a different story.
Exactly. But the water and golf.
Right. So now, you know what I do? I have little tricks. So because I learn how to trick the brain, we have to come up with ways to trick our brain. So now every time I go on the sand, I'm in a bunker. You know what I say? I say, oh, I love it over there, because I do. I say, I love it over there. I said, now I get to practice my sand shot.
There we go. Exactly. Just actually expanding on this watching the pros point, there's something in 10 Grief Lessons from Golf, your book, where you talk about how at some point in time you had an aspiring professional who came to stay with you actually for a while. And so I guess you then had this opportunity up close and personal to see and experience how someone who, I mean, he is playing at that same sort of standard of these guys that we were just talking about. So he's a human being at the end of the day as well, right? So I think we golf lovers, especially those that follow the professional game and watching any elite sport, can have these people up on a pedestal. But, you know, being around him, like what did that teach you just around the athlete's mindset?
Oh, yes, Ricky. Yes, I loved being around him. First of all, it was so wonderful to be inspiring, to be around someone that age that actually had the mentality, you know, this is the mentality I have now about how we think, right? But I've had to develop it and I'm older than him. And here is this young guy, like 27, who already has these ways of thinking, but it's been ingrained in him because he started golf and wanted to go pro at a very young age. So we would sit and have conversations for hours about just life in general and about, because everything goes back to golf. You know, it's how you're living your life goes back to how you think about golf. And we talk about these things, but he also was very disciplined. He'd stay at my house and he'd have, you know, I'd make him breakfast. You know, he'd come in and have breakfast before he'd go out to shoot his round for whatever he was trying to get into the next tournament. Mm. So, you know, I'd always have whatever he needed to eat. And he always, he had a routine where he hydrate and he exercise, he meditate. He did all these things. So he's very disciplined. He was very disciplined because, you know, he was working towards something. And it goes back to us. It goes back to what I'm always saying. It's these habits, you know, these habits we have to create. And, you know, he would go out with me and golf, and he gave me lots of great pointers. And so since I've had him give me lessons, I mean, a little bit, I just don't want to take from anybody else because you know how that is. You start to take too many lessons from too many people and it kind of gets you
right, yeah,
a little confused. And I feel like, and it goes back to, you know this, there's certain things about the swing that you must do to make it right. So if you can go back to the basics always, just got to stick with the basics because sometimes we get off. We get off the, for some, I don't know why it happens. We I don't know. Why does our swing not always stay? Maybe we had an injury or maybe we're tired or maybe we're not hydrated. But when you go back to it, you always can think about your swing. And you know what? We always say what we did wrong. Oh, I came up out of it. Or, oh, I didn't turn my hips. Or, oh, my club face, right? We have a reason for it because there is the right way to swing. You know, there's certain things you have to do the right way, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yes, it was very interesting. But, yes, he's a young guy. He's a human being. We go out to dinner. He had a beer. I'm like, oh, I was saying to myself, oh, you drink beer? Because we think that. Yeah, they're this Zen people. They're not really supposed to.
Well, you know, now that I read about him, I want to track his progress. You know, you speak about him really fondly now in his journey, and you also do so in the books. It's Ricky Polonis, I think, right? So is he still out on the tour, just trying to make it onto the PGA Tour now, is he?
I think he's still. I haven't spoke with him in several months, so look him up. I'm not, yeah. You know, I didn't speak with him, but I'll tell him about this podcast.
I'll be rooting for him, and hopefully the other Golf Yourself Healthy listeners will do so also.
Yes.
I said before, I wanted to ask you about if you could reenact and relive one golf shot that you've hit in your life that just throws up those really positive, nostalgic memories, which one would it be? Talk us through it. Where was it? You know, what were the circumstances?
Oh, that's a good question. And it's definitely means a lot to me. And it makes total sense to me that it happened the way it did. So, and it was just in the last few months. Part of my issue in the beginning with golf is because of my not confident in my game. I never wanted to play with anyone. Now, I used to play with my husband. And I liked playing with him and I liked playing with his guy friends. I liked playing with men because I always, don't take it personally, but I felt like men, they weren't watching. They didn't care what I did. Women are more, they're watching, they're talking more. It's a different story playing with women. But for the men, I liked it because they'd be talking amongst themselves or smoking their cigars. I just go hit my shot and I felt kind of left alone. So I was used to that. So when I came here, it was really hard to golf with women. And so I overcame that. But I never liked to golf with strangers. It was like the word stranger. I was afraid of strangers for some reason. Because it was a level, it's like you don't know. So it's this me. It's a me thing. I'm working through this me thing with me and my golf. And the deeper levels of the deeper things we're dealing with. So, you know, I'm very proud of myself because I'm very confident I play in the league. I play with anybody. So I put myself in on the tee sheet And I know the starter out there, right? So there's an opening and I'm like, oh, great, I can golf by myself, which is rare because I live in a very populated golf club in South Florida where every golfer wants to be in the United States. So I see myself on the tee sheet. I get out there. I'm practicing on the range. I'm ready to go out. And the starter says, oh, he says, see those three guys on the range? They'd like to golf with you. I mean, they want to go out now. And if they don't go out, they have to wait a while. They have to wait an hour. Would you mind if they golfed with you? And I said, oh, I guess. He said, they're really nice. And I said, okay. So they came over, introduced themselves. And the starter said, he said, okay, now, you know, if Robin gets a birdie, you need to buy her a shot of tequila. And I said, okay, guys, we're going for this. So anyway, we're on the hole three or whatever it was. And I hit my drive. It ends up three and like, no, it was 30 foot putt. Now that I remember this one, it was a 30 foot putt. Okay. I putt it. It is hanging on the edge and it didn't go in, but they said to me, they said, oh my gosh, it's a birdie. And I said, no, it's not. Cause they thought it was going to go in.
Right.
They said, no, theoretically it's not a birdie. You do not have to buy me a shot of tequila. So I was so pleased because not only was I pleased that I had that happen, but guess what? It was my best round this year. I golfed a 44, which was my best round, and it was with strangers. So for me, that was such a metaphor because it's like the universe was bringing that to me. It's like, bring it on. And it was telling me that, yes, you can overcome your biggest fears and you get good results when you overcome your biggest fears. So that was like so cool to me. That was so cool. It was an almost birdie, which I have gotten birdies before, but because it's the whole concept of the thing I needed to overcome.
Love that.
Golfing with three strange guys. Not strange, but strangers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a couple of things come to mind here. I mean, first of all, I thought where that story was going to go was, you know, that famous shot by Tiger Woods in the Masters where he chips it from off the green and it's like, It was the Nike marketing dream because the ball's rolling and on the very last roll, it just drops in on the edge. And I thought you were going to say the thing just nestled up next to the hole and just dropped in and the crowds went wild. But I mean, regardless, love that story. But also love the thing about playing with strangers as well and that what that meant in terms of a breakthrough moment for you. I mean, we're not going to have time to talk about it today, but maybe in another subsequent conversation you and I will have or another podcast episode I do here, whatever, we'll talk about. Because playing with strangers, I struggle with that. And I'm sure a lot of other people do too, right? So that's one for another day. But my final question for you today is, reflecting on your life experiences, your grief experiences, your golf experiences, and then ultimately how all of that came together with you writing the book, you know, what's the one kind of golden nugget or that piece of advice, if you like, that really you would give to any golfer out there who maybe is going through a tough time at the moment in life or in their golf?
Oh, the piece of advice I would give would be the reason I wrote the book, I wanted to honor my husband, Jerry, who was the scratch golfer who loved the game. And I wanted to live the way he lived. And I wanted people to see that you can live your life to the fullest and enjoy every moment in life and live your passion. And that's his legacy. So I wanted to honor him with this legacy, but also inspire others to live the way he lived. And he lived loving golf and he lived his life the best that he could. And it inspires people, like, live it, enjoy it, live every moment, no matter what, live every moment and enjoy it. Because guess what? It's the only one you have. So what are you going to do with it? So, you know, the message is just, you may feel like you hate the game, but keep at it because it's going to teach you something that you need to know about your life and about golf.
Love it. Well, Robin, thanks so much. If our listeners aren't already inspired enough, then it's just one final reminder to go out there, get yourself a copy of this book, either for yourself or for someone that you love or care about who, you know, loves golf or maybe, you know, could benefit from it. So that's 10 Grief Lessons from Golf. We'll share a link to it. You can get it on Amazon and probably other places, I think, Robin, right?
Yes.
It's been such a pleasure hosting you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chris.